Welcome to the Public Handicapper Podcast. On this week's pod, we are handicapping the late major stakes from Belmont and Santa Anita on Saturday, June 6th. This is show number 66, June 5th, 2020. I'm Scott Carson, founder of Public Handicapper, and I'm joined by my co-host, Hall of Fame handicapper, Chris Larmy. Chris, how are you?
Doing great. Really excited about having our Public Handicapper pod contest this weekend. It should be fun. I'm looking forward to that. Some real challenging races on the docket for that, and some good races to discuss with our special guest later on this Saturday. So I'm looking forward to it.
And interestingly, I didn't realize this until just a couple days ago. There is an NHC Tour free contest giving away three spots to the NHC on Saturday. And the same races being used for that are the races being used for our feeder that goes, I guess the feeder will earn you entries into Sunday's contest.
That's correct. There'll be another qualifier for the NHC on Sunday, and the top 10% in our contest will win an entry into that contest.
Fantastic. So now that makes it a little bit easier to contemplate handicapping 15 races, since there's going to be thousands of people on that NHC Tour free qualifier. You want 15 races so that people don't just get lucky and hit one long shot. You're probably going to need at least two.
Yes. I mean, that's the nice part about it, is just one long shot. There's still 14 other races to make up that lost ground, where if you had like a 10 or a 12 race contest, it's that much harder to recover from, you know, one horse winning that you didn't have at a big price. Plus, if you're already in the NHC Tour, you were probably going to enter the free contest and do the work anyway to handicap those races. So you might as well enter our feeder. It doesn't take any extra effort, just $18. And if you're not already a tour member, this is a great time to join, because you can have fun in our feeder contest and also play in the free contest. And who knows, you might get lucky and win an NHC spot in, you know, your first contest on the tour. So a lot of good reasons to get involved this weekend.
Yeah. And an important thing that listeners should know, we had at least 40 people sign up for the contest already. But it's important to know that it is a pick and pray. So all selections have to be submitted before the first race. That means you got to handicap all 15 races by whatever the start time is, which is probably around 3:00.
Yeah, I think it's like 3:30 or 3:40 Eastern Daylight Time, I think, is the post for the first race, which I think goes off at Laurel. So yeah, I mean, that's a really good point. For those who aren't familiar with contests or pick and pray format, you have to get the work all done and your picks all in before the first race goes off. It's not one where you can handicap as you go in kind of a live format. So that is important. I'm glad you brought that up.
And, just keep in mind that out of 15 races, there's likely to be one or two double-digit odds winners. And if to effectively have a chance in the contest, you're likely going to need to have one or two, at least, in your selections. Now, of course, after I say that, it could be all chalk, but it's unlikely with 15 races and pretty large fields, especially at Belmont, that that it's going to be all chalk. So make sure you have some price horses mixed in there in case a bomb does come in the first or second race and you don't have it. at least you've got a chance with a bomber later.
Yes, that's a good point as well. And I think especially if you're playing in the free NHC tour contest where there's thousands of other participants, you have to be aggressive in your selections there to have any chance really to, you know, win one of those NHC seats. Now, you can also earn tour points if you're in the top 10%. And that's not as difficult, although to finish in the top 10% typically requires that you hit one or two prize horses in a 15 race contest. In our smaller feeder, where there'll probably be, you know, under 100 people in the, although maybe we'll get more than that. That would be cool if we do. Then it's not like you're certain that every long shot's going to get hit by a bunch of people. So if you're just aiming for that top 10%, you probably can be less aggressive in your selections. But like you said, you probably need to mix in some decent price horses because it won't chalk out with 15 races. You know, that's pretty unlikely. But to finish in the top 10% in our contest, again, you know, it might not be as tough as you think, depending on how things shake out.
And people should know that in the free the NHC contest that is on Saturday, it's the top 10% of up to 1,000 players. So it's paying tour points down to the top 100.
Yeah, good point. So they'll probably be closer to 2,000 or more. So yeah, it's probably more like the top 5%. So you do have to be really aggressive. You know, that's sort of I call. I wrote a blog piece for Pete Fornatel's In the Money website, and I talked about different formats and which would fit different playing styles, strengths, and you know, this free roll contest, that's sort of the most lottery luck type contest when you get thousands of people all shooting for a real top heavy prize structure. So that's where you have to be really aggressive. In our contest, it's a lot fewer people. And you probably don't have to get crazy with your picks, but you don't want to be really conservative and be playing chalk in every race either.
Right. In the NHC qualifier that's free, you would maybe take a price horse in the Santa Anita Derby, but in our feeder, you might be able to get away with taking Authentic, who we haven't discussed the race, but you know, he does look like a pretty heavy favorite. And if you like him, you might be fine in that scenario. I don't know about the NAC one, the free contest with 2,000 players, though.
Right. Because and that's a good point, too. In our contest, you know, those 4 or 6 points or whatever might be the difference between winning and losing or finishing the top 10% or just missing the cut. So a lot of times, if there's a horse you really like that's a short price, there's no reason not to take it in our contest, where in the bigger contest, you might want to think twice if you're doing that very often.
And just to clarify for people who aren't sure, besides the top 10% of our contest going on to the feeder, going on to the NHC qualifier on Sunday, the winner will receive a public handicapper t-shirt and also be invited to spend at least one race with us on the pod.
Yeah. And of course they'll have bragging rights as being the champion of the, you know, pod PH contest. So we'll give them some love on Twitter. I plan on sort of following the contest and tweeting out leaderboards and, you know, giving shout outs to people who are near the top or in the lead. So, you know, that'll be fun, and it's always nice to have a little bit of bragging rights within our little PH community. So I would say this is a very top-heavy prize structure on this contest. First prize is definitely better than the rest.
Yeah, from 3 p.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern tomorrow, I will also be completely engaged and tweeting, probably tweeting out a few losers. So unfortunately, it's pick and pray, so you have to make all those picks beforehand, but anyway, that's the deal. If you aren't on Twitter and you still need the link, send an email to horseplayers@publichandicapper.com, and we'll set you up with that link. Otherwise, Chris has tweeted out the link already. I will do it again later, and Chris will again, I'm sure. And the more the merrier.
Yeah, and I will not be competing in our feeder contest, but I will tweet out a ticket that if I were competing, this would be my ticket or my entry. So if anybody's interested, so you know who not to play. But you can get an idea of how I would play a contest like this, because I'll show you, I'll tweet it out what I would enter if I were in the contest. But I will be watching and cheering people on, but not competing myself.
Yeah, I am in the contest. I have purchased one entry. I've only handicapped five of the races. So based on my handicapping, if I like what I see and I think I have a good chance, I might get a second entry. Otherwise, I'll just stick with one.
Yeah, hopefully one is all it takes. In the pick and pray format, I think multiple entries don't buy you nearly as much as they do in a live format. But if there's a few races where you really like two horses and you'd like to be able to get them both in one of your entries, it might be worth purchasing that second entry. I know a lot of people do that. Maybe you play one that's a little more conservative and one that's got more long shots, just depending on how things shake out over the course of the 15 contests. How you use that second entry in a pick and pray, that could be a topic of conversation all by itself.
Right. But the simplest thing, and I have qualified in one of these, not one of the 2000 player contests, but in a 350 person contest, I finished second. It was a pick and pray. I had two entries because I liked some price horses, but there were some races where I wasn't sure which price horse. So my ticket would stay the same. I think it was 12 races, and I might have 9 of the same picks, but then on 3 races, I just vary it a little bit because I'm not sure. Sometimes you're in that scenario.
That makes a lot of sense. That's definitely one way, and I think that a lot of people would use a second entry, especially if there's a few wide open races and you want to be able to have more than one horse in those races.
And we have a special guest. He's a professional handicapper and regular guest on podcasts. He's qualified for the NHC 13 times, and he is the Eclipse Award-winning champion of the NHC in 2016. He's Paul Matisse Jr. Paul, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Thanks for having me. How you doing, guys?
Pretty, pretty, pretty good. Yeah, I didn't hear Chris. Usually he would respond. I want to make sure he's still there.
Yeah, it's just when all three of us are talking, we end up talking over each other. So I was just trying to lay back a little bit. But hi, Paul. I'm really glad you joined us. I think this will be a great show. I'm looking forward to it.
You were mesmerized by Scott's Larry David impersonation.
I actually have a personal preference. When people write pretty, pretty, pretty good, you're not really writing it as Larry David would say it. It has to be PRETAY, right? And 3 times. Right. It can't be just twice. It has to be 3 times.
That's right.
All right. So just a couple questions, Paul. Our listeners like to know these things, but also I also like to know, I'm unfamiliar with what your handicapping methodology is. I know you've been playing for a long time. Do you analyze races? And I know you have analyzed races in the past, but do you still do that? Or do you ever play with the sheets? Do you use anything special?
Well, my original background is that I did speed figures with Andy Beyer and Mark Hopkins, the Beyer speed figures. I haven't been with them for over 20 years, but I still do figures, my own figures, so that are similar to Beyer figures. They're maybe slightly different here and there and more pace oriented, but that's where I usually start with in most things. However, I've evolved into a lot of different things, you have to do a lot of trip handicapping nowadays with how good the computers are with the math handicapping, and I've always been more of a, probably with the, as I learned from my father, logic handicapping is what he likes to call it. And it just, you know, I guess it's just basically handicapping, but, you know, trying to make sense of everything that, that you're taking in and trying to, and try to spit out some kind of, you know, proper conclusion to all the data. So, but I would, if I had to say where I'd start with my handicapping would be with figures.
Well, it'll be interesting to hear what your figures say in the upcoming races. I had one other question for you, and that is, what tracks are your favorite to play?
Well, you know, the tracks that I prefer to play are the ones that sometimes I can't play because of the, you know, the handle. You know, I tend to like the smaller or lesser tracks more than the bigger tracks, but in the last couple of years I've become more of a bigger track player and spending more time in that direction. And actually even what we're doing today, you know, a bigger race, you know, concentrate more on the bigger races because the Saturday handles are so big and the big day, you know, we're evolving, horse racing's evolving into like a big day type of sport. You know, that's kind of the way we've gone in the last 20 years. And it's really kind of accelerated, I think, in the last few years. That's one thing I've liked about this quarantine. That's kind of like changed that a little bit, but I still think that's kind of what the base of horse racing is right now, is these big days.
Yeah, that is the trend. Now I'm just going to note for listeners that I have very limited exposure to your handicapping. I think I've heard you as a guest on Pete's In the Money Media Players podcast, and I believe you picked a few winners, which was great. I totally respect your handicapping, but mainly because once I knew you were once you won, last year you did a charity thing for Keeneland where you took $200 and could bet it any way you wanted on the card, and you landed on a 17-1 who I also liked, and he won. I think it was 17-1. Yeah. And I was very, very impressed.
Yeah, that was a good one. We did good for that charity. That was, I spent a lot, you know, when you do things like that, and you guys probably know this, you do a lot of it with, especially with this podcast, is that when you're giving out things, you work harder than you would do it for yourself. You know, you kind of like,
absolutely. I work hardest from like 8 PM on Thursday until the time I record the podcast. And there's no let up. I wake up at like 6 AM and I continue to handicap. Chris, did you have any, questions for Paul?
Yeah, a couple. One, the figure making, I mean, you have a background in that, started with Buyer. Continue to do your own figures. How does that help you in terms of handicapping races? You know, where does that come into play? Do you think that gives you a special edge? And if so, why?
Well, one of the things that I have an edge because of that is because I look at so many of these races, you know, so, and Chris has one of the greatest ideas ever for figures. Putting it into use is a little harder, but the idea, the concept of like a color coded, chart to decide how certain you are on each figure. You know, I love that idea that you have, Chris, but, and kind of when you're doing figures, you kind of know that, you know, I know this figure's solid. I know this one isn't. You know, that type of thing where if you're looking at a sheet or if you're looking at the racing form, you don't know exactly how that figure was created. So I think that's a little bit of an edge. I'm going to steal that idea from you at some point. I'm working on it.
I would love it. And maybe as a bonus, you can share some of your figures with me. Because like Scott said, I'll be real interested to see where your figures differ from some of those like the buyers out there in the races we discuss.
Yeah, that you know, and I haven't looked at it what anybody else has for these races, so that will be kind of, that'll be interesting.
Cool. I actually had a question for you. Based on your figures, do you play like bounce theory, Like if a horse runs 10 points or 10%, I don't know how your figures work, so I don't know what it is, but a certain amount of improvement at a certain age where you say, oh, that's got to hurt that horse.
Well, I'm not really a big bounce guy, though I do believe in it, but predicting it, I think, is harder than what most people, how they use it. I think they use it too loosely, you know, in doing so. But yeah, there's definitely form cycles that I definitely use in the figures. And the one thing that I have, I would say, if I have any advantage with the figures, and for me, is that I incorporate bias and pace into the figures, and I'm looking for the reason why maybe a figure was faster for a certain horse, and why he may regress more based on the way the figure was earned than necessarily I'm just going to say, well, this is too fast for him, he's not really that good, and or he ran too good that day, and he's definitely going to bounce. I'm looking for more reasons why, you know.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And I think what you just said is really good, because, you know, this bounce thing is sort of, I don't like the term, I like to call it regression off of, you know, a number.
Yeah, so do I, yeah.
But it's so polarizing, because some people say, oh, there's no such thing as that. And I think they're wrong when they say that. Some people say, well, you know, if these horses gonna regress for sure, and they're wrong there. There's reasons why a horse is likely not to run back to a number. Sometimes it's because it may, you know, cause him to physically regress. But like you said, it could be a lot of other reasons where that number, the way they earned it, is just not going to happen again in the next race, or maybe ever again. So it could be all those factors. It's not as simple as, you know, it's just not black and white. And everyone always tries to make things, you know, 100% sure. And you just aren't never 100% sure about anything in life, probably, and certainly not in racing. So I really,
that's for
like
sure.
That.
And I like the way you said it. It's oversimplifying it. And I don't like to oversimplify anything in handicapping. And I know that, you know, that some people don't have the time that the three of us put into racing. So, you know, it gets them to places quicker. But if you want to really know what's going on, you oversimplifying it can get you into trouble.
Yeah, I was guilty of that in the past, and maybe a little bit still sometimes now. But in the past, I would look, just because I didn't want to put in the work, I would just look at a sheet, and if a horse ran a big number, I'd just say bounce and just toss it. And they won like half the time.
So I have one last question, just a fun question for you, Paul, because I know you've hit a lot of big pick sixes. You know, I'm talking really big ones, and you won the NHC. Which was more fun? Which one did you enjoy more, winning the NHC or hitting a big pick six?
Well, the NHC was the best thing that I've ever done. I in racing, that was just so much fun, and it was a. I don't like, you know, people like to lessen that tournament, but you guys know, you've been in it, that there's nothing light about, especially the new format of the NHC. It is a real challenge, and I know it's only 3 days, but and things can come up that can go your way and be lucky, but you know, to be that focused for 3 days and do that sort of thing and beat the best handicappers in the world, you know, I think that's the, you know, the ultimate in handicapping. So, and I will attack anybody who says otherwise. So I will tell you, those pick sixes are exciting too, especially, you know, so the circumstances when the one I hit that I won the most money on wasn't all that exciting, but to me, except for the money part of it. You know, there's been some other ones that, you know, it's just like any bet that you hit, you know, just, it doesn't matter what there's a great feeling in being correct, you know, and being right and getting paid for it. It's there's nothing better, as you guys know.
I absolutely agree with everything you said about the NHC and about just, you know, the whole reason we play this game we put the time in, we make a prediction, we put our money behind that, and you score. And even if it's not a big score, it's just that feeling you get about, you know, being right. You know, Andy Beyer call it, you know, king of the world feeling. You know, that's what right. brings us back every day. Even professional like you can enjoy those moments, right? So
without a doubt, And I don't like when anybody lessens that either. You know, that's the draw. That's what, in fact, we haven't, you know, racing as a whole hasn't done a good job of marketing that. You know, I think that even all three of us have talked about that before. You know, that's putting that in a bottle somehow is to me is the key to the future of handicapping and racing. But that's another story.
Yeah, no, I think you phrased it best. And I saved that tweet that you probably don't remember it, but you said, you know, you compared to sports betting, when you predict a winner in a horse race, it's an accomplishment and one that you take pride in. And if there's a way to bottle that up and share it with other people, that's what we got to do. That will turn other people onto horse racing. All right. Well, let's get to our races. We're going to do the 6th through 9th at Belmont, and then also the Santa Anita Derby, which is the 8th at Santa Anita. They're all five races are part of the NHC free contest and the Public Handicapper private podcast feeder, which rewind and you can get all the details on that. So we'll start with the 6th race at Belmont. It's the Fort Marcy Stakes, a grade 2, 1.8 mile on the inner turf, purse of $150,000 for 4-year-olds and up. And Paul, as our guest, we'll let you go first.
I get to go first, huh? You know, these races were unbelievable to me because they were so complicated races where you could actually see the favorite win in all five of them. You know, it's like on face level, they're much more complicated than what they maybe what the results will be. But you know, this race here, I thought the first time I went through it, I didn't throw anybody out. That's how wide open it was. But I started leaning on the fact that I have this as a high figure. I don't know what you guys have, but the race at Fairgrounds, the Muniz Memorial, was an extremely fast race. And I think the two horses coming out of that race were, you know, didn't have great good setups, both of them in the race. So I ultimately came to land on those two the most, the 5 and the 6. That's instilled regard in Synchrony. I wish, I'm a little skeptical if Synchrony is as good as he was. If I had the confidence that he was as good as what he was last year, I would definitely really like him in this race, especially at Belmont. The way he runs, I think he's gonna like the big turns of the Belmont turf, and he's gonna be able to get his momentum going, which then sometimes on when he runs on these bull ring turf courses, he has trouble getting going. But I'm not 100% certain that he's as good as he was last year. I'm interested to see what you guys think about that. I did have one long shot in the race that the Some Like It Hot Round, because this race, like most turf races, doesn't have a lot of pace. And I have those two Polytrack races that he ran at Turfway as being very fast and very good. And I like the confidence that Maker's running him in this race too. I think that's a positive sign that he's going to take a shot at this type of race on the turf. So that's kind of the three horses that I'm going to use in probably in the horizontals and probably box them up somehow. But difficult race.
If you had to make a pick as your top pick, which horse would it be?
Synchrony.
Okay, I will agree that he's just a plain fast horse. And when I looked at the race and I looked at the numbers, I thought this could be one of the horses, but I thought he was also going to be like 10-1, and he's 4-1 morning line. We'll see how they bet it. Chris, what did you think?
Well, before I weigh in, I just wanted to have a question for Paul. You mentioned the Belmont turf course. You know, Belmont's a pretty unique layout in American racing, and they do have two turf courses. This is on the inner course, and they have an outer course as well. So maybe just any general comments on playing horses on the turf, on either of those turf courses, relative to each other or relative to other turf courses around the country that players might want to keep in mind at Belmont?
Well, you know, the inner turf, that the mile and an eighth, has got that short run up this into this race, which makes these races a little bit weird. On the inner turf, this mile and eighth on the inner turf is a race that you should, you know, pay attention to, where positioning seems to matter more. The other races, it doesn't seem that much more. It's more like the, you know, a European or a Hong Kong type track, where the horses that can ramble and come down and finish the fastest, you know, aren't as disadvantaged as, say, Saratoga, you know, where everything is position and the best horse never wins. One of the things I like about the Belmont turf course is that a lot, you know, it's a rarity in America where it's a turf track where the best horse can win a lot. You know, you're not as dependent on trips.
Yeah, I think Chad Brown agrees with you about liking Belmont for that very reason. Okay, so, and I saw the race pretty similarly. I'm a little higher on Some Like It Hot Brown, just because I think he is fast. He's run well at Belmont before. And he has a tactical edge. I think he can clear in here. That short run to the first turn, he should be able to get the rail and the lead. I think that's really big in a two-turn race on the turf. His numbers fit. He still has some upside. You know, maker horses tend to continue to improve. So I don't know if he'll really go off at 15-1, but for me, that's clearly the value play, the three-horse Some Like It Hot Brown.
Well, I'm going to – you took away all my thunder, but I figured you might, so I was kind of half expecting it. Just to add to the Some Like It Hot Brown love, he has that tactical edge, right? He was actually third in the BC Juvie Turf by 3/4 of a length. So even though he's looked like a synthetic specialist the last couple of years, he's always been fast on the turf. And specifically, I just looked up it's a limited sample, but just out of interest, I looked up the results from Belmont yesterday. And there was a wire-to-wire winner at about 9-5. It was second choice at Belmont. And then an inside run in a sprint from a 47-1 winner. And then the 38-1 winner was the outer turf, but that just gives you an idea as to like how soft and cushy it is. It seems to be speed favoring. So he's got that going for him. This is his fourth off a long layoff. He lost his last for two reasons at Turfway, where he's a specialist, right? And I think he was the favorite. First thing he did was he took the inside path on the second turn. And there's one thing I learned from Dan Cronin: don't take the inside of Turfway. That was like his main thing when we had him analyzing Turfway races. So that was the first reason. And the second reason is he was second to a monster undefeated horse on the synth. And that was Nonetheless, who was on figures was a monster on synthetic. It was just a question whether he was going to run it that day. And he did. So I like Some Like It Hot Brown too. And I would just mention, as uses, if I do the pick five, this isn't part of the pick five, it's part of the pick six. So if I do the pick six, which I think I'm going to, because I'm skinny and enough legs, I would also add Gucci Factor, Social Paranoia, Devamani, and Synchrony.
So, Paul, I'll let you jump in, especially on the figure side. How does Some Like It Hot Brown and your figure stack up to horses like Instilled Regard and Synchrony?
Well, he's right in the same. I got him running almost the same exact thing on the synthetic, and I couldn't argue with you guys. I think he's good. Do you guys really think he's going to be 15-1? That's the when I was looking at it. I'm not sure he's going to be that price.
No,
I wasn't sure how they were going to bet this race.
10-1, maybe.
Yeah, I think it'll be a higher price than many in the field, though. But yeah,
15 yeah, probably. Yeah.
Just because
that
of the
seems
connection.
Too high, right?
Yeah, I agree. It Although there are,
I want to ask you guys about the Divamani. That's the infamous NHC race. The Tampa race where 70% of the people in the contest had Admiral Pierre.
Yeah.
In the that was the 20-1 shot in the mandatory race there at the end of the day, at the end of the second day.
Yeah. God damn it. I'm going to regret that race.
I had Divamani. That's why I asked.
Well, one horse that Scott did mention in here that I think we should is the four horse flop shot. Who's this Chad Brown, Euro off the layoff, first start in the U.S. You know, he's just pretty phenomenal with these horses. You never know how much they're going to improve. I know, Paul, you pay attention to some of these European horses. What do you think about him in here? He's kind of, you almost have to use just because it's Chad Brown and the type of horse, but I'm just curious what you thought of that four, because you didn't mention him either.
Well, you know, ultimately his form is really good. And I know he's worked with Raging Bull, but just on some of the workout stuff out there, I didn't like the fact that he was getting beat almost in every one of his workouts. He was working with a horse named Flavius, who evidently must be another Euro horse that I don't know. And Raging Bull. And I even watched a couple where he didn't look all that comfortable. He was sweating and he was keeping up with him and he could work with him, but he didn't seem as good as his workmates all the time. So ultimately that's why I think he's going to have to be really good to, I mean, it's still Regard and Synchrony are really top-notch turf horses, obviously, with, you know, Greywood wins and placings, you know, quite a bit of them. So he better run better than he's worked. That's the way I felt about it.
The other thing that I noticed, and this is why I didn't really consider him, he's running against fast horses, so he would need to improve a lot. But also his two wins are on soft turf and synthetic. And it's not going to be either of those. So he's a question mark. I say give him a race.
Those are all good points. That's interesting. I didn't watch any of his workouts. So that I admire your thoroughness there, Paul. And that's good information. Definitely if you just look at the numbers in terms of winning on these kinds of horses, he does really well, but they tend to get overbet. Although this is the weird part about some of these races today is you get like four Chad Brown horses. They can't possibly play them all. So you might actually get one of them at a price. Just figuring out which one.
Yeah,
that would be.
I got one coming up later too, that has been working good. That's a similar situation. So
I'm glad to hear that. Cause there's one of his that
tease
I like.
Out up there on that.
Yeah. Maybe we're on the same horse because I do too.
Yeah.
Wait, I do too. Huh.
Uh-oh.
It could be a triple pod pick. All right. Let's move on to the seventh race. It's the Westchester Stakes, grade 3, mile and a 16th on dirt, $100,000 for 4-year-olds and up. Chris, we'll let you start this one.
Great race. I mean, these are the sort of races you just don't typically get. I mean, this is what the benefit of all the craziness this year. We get lots of races like this here lately. So it was fun to handicap. You have to start with Code of Honor. He's a really good horse, but you know, this is an example where on the figures, at least the figures that I've looked at, he's not really faster than many horses in here. He's certainly really good and he's got upside, but you know, he's giving weight, significant weight to a lot of these runners. It's off the layoff. This is certainly not the ultimate target that they have for this horse this year. Just to me, this is a horse, this is the time you take a shot against him. He might end up being horse of the year, who knows, but this is the place where he's a play against. So to me, I'm going to take a shot to try to beat him. The problem is that there's so many ways you can go. I'll talk about one horse. There's several I could, but I'll pass it on. The one horse I sort of landed on is the one horse endorsed, who's been a really nice horse. You know, he looked good overcame trouble and won his debut at Saratoga. Had some issues, so he's been kind of, you know, race sparingly. But his races last year were all pretty good. He tried to take on Code of Honor when Code of Honor was, you know, more mature and developed and on the top of his game in the Travers, and he kind of got, you know, soundly beaten, but that was a good effort for him. And now we're in a new year, and I think he's joined a new barn for Bill Mott. Bill Mott got a nice race out of him in his first start for him. This is the second start. I think he's sitting on a big race. He draws the rail. Seems like there's plenty of pace to set up his kick. And his last race was, he had a lot of trouble. That was an adventuresome trip, and he still got the job done. So that, to me, was very encouraging. He's 6-1 in the morning line. You could get that in here, I think, and that seems like a square price. There's some bigger prices I'm kind of interested in as well, but I think probably my top pick would be the one endorsed.
All right. I have positive feelings about endorsed as well. Paul, what did you think?
Well, I do have positive feelings on Endorsed as well. The one thing I am a little worried about him is, and I agree with you what you said about his last race. I thought that was a very good race. But, you know, you learn things from people from anywhere in racing. And one of the one things I learned a long time ago is that certain horses like to run inside and some like to run outside. And I at first, I didn't think it was anything. And the more I've looked at it over years, the more I agree with the person who told me that. And that's the one thing I worry about Endorsed. He's done a lot of his racing outside of horses, and now he's going to be inside. And I'm a little worried about that. As far as the favorite, which Code of Honor, he's obviously the most likely winner in the race. I wanted to be more against him like you are. But the thing about Code of Honor that I think is that he's better at these. This might be his best distance. I know that he's won at a mile and a quarter, but I think that ultimately he's really a mile and 16th type of horse. So even though I want to take against, I'm going to be cautious, because I think if he's, like you said, if he's going to be the horse of the year, he's going to win this race, even though he may not be pointing for it. So that's why I'm not just hell bent against him. But the horse I'm going to pick, and the horse I'm going to bet a little bit, definitely going to protect with him on top, Code of Honor. But I came up with, and it took me a couple times through this to go here, but I like Miro's, the Jimmy Jerkins horse. And I think the big difference with him is that I think he's gotten way better since they put blinkers on him. And his figures have only gone up a little bit, but I think it's a little bit of a scenario where the figures aren't telling the whole story. And I think he's improved way much, much more than what his figures suggest. And I think he won his last race pretty easy. I know his races at Belmont and at a mile and 16th are not as, you know, haven't been the greatest. However, I like the way he's worked into this race. The 1:14 6 furlong work out of Belmont, I absolutely just love that workout. Coming right back with a 3 furlong and 36. I think that they think he's going to run the best race he's ever run today. And also, I read Ortiz, who is, you know, the top jockey in the world right now and making all the right moves. He's going to ride him for the first time, but it seems like to me that he chose him over Monongahela and maybe a few others in this race, which I think is really interesting since Monongahela is now trained by Chad Brown, and he kind of spun Chad Brown to wanting to ride this horse, which is an interesting move for, you know, those two barns. He rides much more for Chad Brown than he does for Jimmy Jerkins, and that I think that's a real positive sign. I wanted to make one comment about Monongahela, who I don't think is as good as one, at one turn, but I wanted to see what you guys think. But I've been amazed how well these Jason Service and even the Navarro horses have, but particularly the Jason Service horses have run, the former ones. They have, it's like one of the best angles in racing nowadays. I mean, they just have, I have some theories of why, but I don't, I don't know necessarily understand it completely, but so I wouldn't, you know, it's like everybody's just throwing those horses out, and it's been a mistake actually, because they've done real well. But I'm going with Miro's.
So well, why do you think that I didn't mean to interrupt, Scott, just on the X service horses, you said you had some theories on why you think they're running well. I have one, but I'm just curious what yours would be.
Well, they've all been through like a big critical like process to run again, right? So we're seeing the better ones running. You know, the ones that have come out of it, and they've probably been treated more and gone over with a fine tooth comb, you know, that type of thing. But to me, that's not enough. So I'm interested to hear what you guys think of why they're running so good.
Well, mine's just a guess, but I mean, they might actually be getting some really testing workouts that are getting them, you know, fit in a way they weren't with service.
Right. That's a good point too.
Yeah. That really strange, who knows exactly what he was doing, but he never ever asked them in the mornings, right, for any kind of speed. So probably for some horses, you know, being forced to work a little harder in the morning means they're going to get a little fitter than they ever have been from an, you know, aerobic standpoint.
Right. And we're seeing the ones that have thrived doing that. So that would make sense.
So that was just my idea, just because, you know, what's the biggest difference when they go to service to someone else other than the obvious stuff is just the way he trained was so different than most any other trainer, right?
Yeah, that's a good point.
I did note, whenever it's at least a pod race, I look at the workouts for every horse, and every single post Jason service horse is working out better than it ever has. I don't really have a theory. I think that in general, he got some good stock and that he didn't necessarily squeeze them all dry. I actually landed on, I thought this race was pretty wide open. So I definitely want a price. And the horse that I actually think this horse has a shot. It's the 10, Wait For It, or maybe it's the 11, Wait For It. He's got 10. A tough post. Yeah, he's a 10. And Code of Honor has the 9. And people should know about Code of Honor that at the distance of mile 16th at Belmont, last meet out of 27 races, not a single winner came from post 8 on out. Now, I don't know how many are in the sample size, but out of 27 races, probably a fair amount. And none of them won at this distance. So that's a reason to play against Code of Honor as well as the top weight. Now, I pick a horse that's even to his outside, which is crazy, but at the same time, his odds are going to be astronomical. So I'm interested. Wait For It is capable of speed, so he should be able to get some position. The 98 buyer that he ran 3 races ago tells you that he's just about fast enough for this group. I mean, not necessarily all on their very best race, but he's fast enough, and he's only carrying 118. He was less than three lengths off of it in the Pimlico Special when he finished 4th last year. He was sort of fast as a 2-year-old, but he was ultimately gelded in June of 2008, and that coincidentally is when he got fast. Now, he had run pretty fast as a 2-year-old, so it wasn't like it completely came out of left field, but he improved dramatically on the gelding. He's 4 for 8 at the distance. He's been freshened after an off effort that still came up as a good number. And really interestingly, he had a nice 6-furlong work in 113 on May 27th. That's the only time he's ever run a 6-furlong work that's recorded, at least. And that's racehorse workout time. And that tells me that he's ready to go off a brief freshening. His trainer is 1 for 10 at Belmont. And that win was a 47-1 in a Grade 3 stake. I think it was the Victory Ride. And with this jockey, he gets 6 pounds from Code of Honor off the layoff. Who's off the layoff? And I think he could be 30-1. So that's my top pick. And then I really like the way Endorse is coming along. I know that he's won from at least the two post, and I'm not sure how that I didn't watch that race. But I agree with you, Paul, that some horses just don't like to run on the inside. I haven't determined that with him yet. I'll have to look at his other races and see like where he ended out getting his positioning. But for purposes of the Empire pick six payout, force out, I will go skinny in this race, believe it or not, with Wait For It and Endorsed.
Well, I just wanted the other horse I really like in here is the one that Paul's on, Mijo. So I think I'm a little bit concerned on the distance. I think it does seem like that could be a bit of a question mark based on his breeding and his form. But I do agree that I think he's sitting on a big race. I figured Scott wouldn't like him because he typically doesn't like these horses stretching out off a big effort. But I like those horses more than Scott does, especially a third off the layoff going, you know, Jerkins going sprint route, you know, 6 furlongs, 7 furlongs now, one turn, mile and a 16th. You know, that's kind of old school progression off the layoff. So I do like him. And for me, between him, he and Endorsed, it will be in the sort of a price thing. But I kind of lean towards Endorsed just off the breeding and the likelihood to like the distance a little more. I mean, Endorsed is just royally bred. A Dance Card was just a great mare. That's the mother of Endorsed and Medaglia d'Oro. So that's just really good breeding on. But those two, Endorsed and Mios, those are the ones that I like the most in here. And I, you know, Scott said the post. The other thing is Johnny Velasquez. I just don't see how Code of Honor doesn't end up three wide at least on the turn in this race. So not only is he giving significant weight, he'll be giving ground. So he's got to be a lot better, I think, than this field to win. He might be, like Paul said, he is the horse of the year. He's supposed to win in here, and maybe he will. But I'm just a little more negative on him than I think Paul is in here. So for me, it's Endorsed in Mijos, the one and the three.
I will add that I was sort of on the fence with Mijos. So given that you both like him so well and good points, Paul, about the much improved since Blinkers and that Irad chooses him, I totally get why he might not want to ride Monongahela, but that he went out of his way to ride this horse, I think, is an endorsement. So I haven't tried to construct my ticket because I've only handicapped 4 of the 6 races. But if I add a third horse, I think it'll be Mijos.
I agree with you guys, too, that I wish it really wasn't a mile and 16th. I think that's maybe the drawback. But you're going to get value for taking a shot at it. And what you said, Chris, about there's no doubt in my mind he's going to run real good. Whether he's good enough, that's going to be the, and he can make it that far, you know. But he's definitely going to run. You get the feeling he's going to run a real big one, you know. And at a 10-1 morning line, which he isn't going to be, but you know he's going to be up close to it. It seems like a worthwhile shot to me.
And you can see right at the bottom of Formulator or DRF. PDF PPs, that 2 sprints to a route, set out of 7 races, Jimmy Jerkins, this is like in the last 2 years, he's hit 4 of those. So with a 181 ROI. So that is, those are legitimate angles. And I may be on board as well.
Yeah. And on the price, you know, that morning line is based on Code of Honor going off at close to even money. If you think he will, you might get 10-1 on.
Yeah, maybe. Right. I was just thinking the Irad factor, you know, he's been
yeah,
over that quite a bit.
And as hot as he's been, if he stays hot today, that's a good point.
Right.
Yep. One other negative and then we'll move on. But one other negative with Code of Honor, his 3-year-old debut, he lost at 4-5. So I don't necessarily think he's going to lose, you know, but that means he's guaranteed not to win, but that's what happened. So it's just another small negative.
Yeah, and that's.
I think it's a weird phenomenon. Like, oh, go ahead, Chris. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead, Paul. Go ahead.
I just think it's a weird phenomenon, like you were saying, that he's not being pointed for this race, but it's a weird. We're going to find out how good he is. I think, you know, like if he can be the one of the best horses in the country, you're gonna find it because it's not really an ideal setup for him. But I couldn't argue with the fact that like you said, he might end up being the best horse in the country, you know, when it's all said and done. So it's a rare race where maybe he's not pointing to win it at all costs, but I think we'll get a good line of how good he really is.
Yeah, and Scott made a good point that last year and it's a different year, but he looked like a short horse, and I really loved him at his next start. I mean, people were saying he couldn't get the distance. You know, he looked like a one-turn horse, all that kind of stuff you hear when a horse makes a move and then doesn't finish. But he just looked like a short horse to me, and then he ran a really big race in the next one. So, you know, he could – I think it comes down to you think can he win this with his B game, really? And maybe
right.
a horse of
yeah,
the year should. You know, maybe a horse of the year should win this race with a B game. But, you know, I'm willing to take a shot against him.
Yeah, it doesn't mean you want to bet him. Right.
Right.
That's a good point.
All right, let's – go on to our third race on the docket. It's the eighth at Belmont, the Intercontinental Stakes, a grade three, 7 furlongs on the turf, purse of 100,000 for fillies and mares, 4-year-olds and up. Paul, why don't you get us started this time?
Well, this race is the one that you're referring to that Jed has 4 of them in. And 2 of them are going to be they're really bet favorites. But, like I was saying earlier, the one horse Viadera is really working good, and that and even over the top good. I know most of Chad's horses work good, but her last couple workouts have been incredible. And the fact that I know he's got to run all these horses against each other, but I still think it's positive that he's going to run this horse in this race against Newspaper Record and Significant Form. I know he's got to treat them all separately, and he doesn't have to. He's kind of got a problem where he's got to run them against each other anyway. But I think this is a scenario where it is positive that he's running her in this race. And the one step further is that, similar to what I was talking about earlier with the jockey moves, Rosario is going to ride over Roseflower, a horse that I like a little bit in this race for Clamott. And I think that's a really positive move that he's going to ride. I don't know if he's worked her at all, but just the idea that he's going to jump off a Clamott horse that kind of fits in the race for the third Chad, or maybe arguably the fourth Chad in the race. By Morning Line, I think he's the fourth Chad. I think that's a positive move as well. And I like Post One on top of everything else. I like the way this race is going to play out, because this is a rare like race where you see this in Hong Kong a lot. You kind of try to have to measure the pace by the outside horses. And sometimes in these turf races, particularly these turf sprints. And if you go through this race, nobody on the outside is going to send. Nobody outside the 6. I mean, maybe the 7 is going to go forward, and maybe the 12 will go forward with the tuck, but most of the outside horses are just going to fall back and ride cold, you know, looking to make one runs, which is going to make this pace at least on the slow side. And I seem to think that when that happens, the inside flow of races happens more in these turf races when there's no outside centers. So I think he's just going to fall into a good spot along the rail. And the more I looked at this race, the more I liked her. I think there's Newspaper of Record is interesting because I have a theory on horses that have speed cutting back in turf sprints. I usually like that move if they're just total front runners going longer and they cut back to a turf sprint. So, and the fact that he's running her, I would expect her to run good, but ultimately there's not a lot of value there on a guess. So even though I think she's probably going to run run pretty good. It's like one of these things where, all right, she might going to run good, but so I definitely don't want to bet her. So, besides the Chad horses and the other one I mentioned, the only one I did want to bring up is that Jakarta, is going to get an easy lead in the race. And, ultimately I decided that I don't think she's good enough to take her all the way. But I do think that, it'd be silly to leave her out and maybe in some of the vertical gimmicks, but I'm definitely going to play a Viadera.
Well, the Viadera, it's notable that she ran a bullet 1 out of 67 on turf, because I mean, Chad horses do work out well. Like they usually get glowing workout reports, but they don't get bullets. It's pretty rare for them to get bullets. So that she's doing that indicates that she's probably, despite his intentions, just can't help but run that fast. I will definitely consider using Viadera. I actually have another long shot in this one, and that is the 3 Eye in the Sky. Oh, sorry. It's Chris's turn.
That's all right, Scott. You can go ahead. I can go last. That's fine.
All right. Yeah, all right. Yeah. Okay. So that was, we'll just kind of sail through the awkwardness of that. So Eye in the Sky, is a horse that's always had some talent. She won her debut closing in a 4.5 furlong race at, I think it was Churchill. And, she's never won going past 6 furlongs, so it's definitely a question mark. However, like she had one bad race at Belmont at 7 furlongs where I gave her a trip note. She was rank, and that was last year. She has won a few different races, and she's training up a storm. And they're not the fastest workout she's ever had, but it's just a strong series of bullets. She has a little circle back pattern going that bodes well for her best effort. If she can run better than she's ever run, which I think she can as a young 4-year-old, I think she can light up the tote board here, especially against 4 Chads. and Mark Cassie is waking up. He hit with Tap It to Win yesterday. I think the pace is likely to be faster than Timeform US is saying. I think Jakarta has to have the lead. But newspaper record, one of the reasons why Irad gets criticized for his riding on that horse is because he tries to strangle her. And she goes for the gusto. Maybe they say, hey, like cut her loose in this race. My negative on her is that she's only won on yielding courses. I mean, she's never run as fast as she's done as a 2-year-old on yielding courses. So I'm against her in that. I also think Get Mother a Rose is fast enough to win and coming off a little top. And I'll pass it to you, Chris.
Well, I'm in agreement with a lot of what both of you said, but I just want to say one thing. I love listening to Paul talk about trips. I mean, it's just next level stuff. I like the language you use. You're the kind of guy I love to be sitting next to at the races every day, because the way you break down the races and think about things from a trip kind of perspective is really enlightening. So I'm really glad we had you on the show, and just to hear you talk about that was fun. I'm all with you on Viadera, and hearing about the workout reports makes me obviously like her even more. And you mentioned Rosario on board. For a Judmont horse with Rosario, Chad Brown's kind of lights out with these foreign imports. He's good with them in general. But, when he brings them back in a graded stakes off the layoff for Judmont and Rosario jumps on, it's go time. And this horse actually has some tactical speed. She's not a plodding type. And if you look at her races, her best races are sprinting, or at least at a mile or less, and on firm going. So if you're looking for a Euro horse that's going to, translate into U.S. style racing, you want one that has some tactical speed, can handle the firm going, you know, and has demonstrated being able to sprint. You know, 7 furlongs was kind of an elongated sprint, but it just seems like it'll be in her wheelhouse. So, and she gets in light at 118 pounds. So just a lot to like there. I'm afraid the workouts tend to get bet. To me, I've discovered even more than horses with bad trips getting overbet, horses with raving workout reports get wildly overbet now, especially on the major circuits. So I'm a little concerned now that you said that, that this horse will open up as, you know, at a lower price than newspaper of record in significant form, but we'll see. So I'm a little bit nervous now about the price because of those workouts. But to me, that horse has got a lot going for it. And if it really is the fourth highest priced Chad Brown horse, you know, you've got a player. But you both mentioned two other price horses I think are very live. Jakarta, because of the speed factor, and third start for Mike Maker. And like we mentioned before, his horses just continue to improve. They don't get big jumps forward, but they just tend to continually get better and over an extended period of time. So this is the third start for him. Not a typical Mike Maker horse, a speed horse sprinting on the turf, but still very dangerous, I think, at a price. And I agree with Scott on Eye in the Sky. She fits in here. If you look at her sprint races, especially on firm turf, they're all pretty good. I don't know if she's can class up here like with these, but she's got some good past races. Like Cassie is seemed to be heating up. And if you look at her last race, she got just completely shut off in the stretch. It was amazing that nobody went down or anything. I mean, she had a horse trying to get out inside of her, completely pinched her in. And for like 100 yards, she was like completely almost like a cattle in a cattle chute kind of run for about 100 yards in the stretch, where she was just completely pinched on both sides. She's in this real compact position. It's really weird. You should watch the replay. You have to go. You can't watch it on Formulator because it was at Fairgrounds, I think. But watch that replay, because major excuse for her. And then she galloped out really well. So I think she is sitting on a big race. Not sure she's good enough, but you'll get a monster price. Definitely one to include in the exotic. So I think a newspaper of record, we all mentioned that one. To me, this was kind of the square peg in a round hole. This horse is not the kind that Chad Brown likes all his horses. You know, he likes the riders to grab, settle, and finish. And this is a horse that just did not, that style did not suit her. They tried to force it on her last year. It backfired. And like Scott said, I think they're shortening her up, which to me says they're going to let her, you know, run early and not try to grab, and it'll be interesting to see what happens. I don't think she's a good bet, but she could run off the screen here if they let her roll and she responds to it. But there's a lot of question marks, and she'll be over bet. So I ramble quite a bit, but I think we're all on pretty much the same page on this race.
Which of those three, Chris, that you mentioned, are you picking as your pod pick?
Okay, well, probably.
Sorry.
Yeah, that's fine. I was going to be Viadera. I'm just a little bit worried now on the price with her. I'd hate to pick a horse that goes off at 5-2 in here. But I'll go with her. I'll go with Viadera in here. She'll be my top pick.
Yeah, there's going to be betting so many horses here that she's not going to go off 5-2. Significant Inform is all the way on the outside. That horse is going to take some money. But we just for purposes of keeping the pod going, let's move on to the ninth race at Belmont. It's the Run Happy Carter Handicap, a grade one, 7 furlongs on the dirt, purse of $250,000 for 3-year-olds and up. And Chris, we'll let you start this time.
Boy, another great race. Really great race. Similar to Code of Honor, I'm kind of against Performer for all the same reasons. I think he's a really good horse, but I think he'll get overbet. I'm going to go with a big bomb in here, and that's the 8 horse Bon Raison, who ran some big races last year, despite running almost every week, it seemed like. And then finally tailed off at the end of the year. But he changed barns and ran pretty well off of freshening last time. And then because of all the craziness recently, he hasn't run much. I think he's the kind of horse that will really benefit from that. He changes barns again who I think is a better trainer than who he was with last year. And Cancel stays on board, and he's actually won on this horse three times already. And the horse is 30-1 in the morning line and probably will be 30-1 at post time in this field, maybe higher. And I think his best race is fit, and there's no reason why he couldn't win at a giant price. So you can make a case for many others. I'll turn it over to you guys. I have a couple other opinions in here, but to me, this is like the crazy long shot play of the day is the 8-horse Bone Rezone.
Well, I will agree. I didn't pick him on top, but I wrote, could blow up the try in super. Paul, what did you think?
I agree with Chris that this is a great race, the handicap, and a very difficult one. And, you know, the first thing that sticks out is that Frenzy Fire is one of these service horses that if they hadn't been running so good, I would hate, you know, but he scares me now because they've done so good. And the fact that Frenzy Fire loves Belmont. I'm not thrilled with post one, though. The more I looked at the race, the more I thought he would just go from post one, which I think that the way this race sets up is interesting because the two horses that probably don't, I think, run better when they kind of settle more is Frenzy Fire and Performer, and both of them are going to go. So, you know, I don't like doing this when I do shows, but this race here, I think, is a very important one to watch how the track is playing. Because if you're seeing inside flows, those two horses are going to be more aggressive and they're going to have a much better chance. And if the track is not playing that direction, it's playing outside, you've got two very good horses on the outside in Mind Control and Tacoma who are, you know, stalkers who on an outside track flow are going to benefit. They're just going to sweep to the lead. This was a race figure wise. I was interested to see what you guys had. I had Vekoma running the top figure, maybe subtracting some of those crazy Frenzy Fire races, but off much faster than his recent races. His last race was a total breakout, top notch grade one type figure that I gave him. And I've been trying to figure out how he's going to react off that race. Something to go back to what we were talking about from the beginning. And I'm not sure, to be frank, if he's going to repeat that race. If he repeats that race and that figure, I think he's going to win on an even to an outside track. I think he's going to win. And for that matter, if I had to pick a horse for the podcast, I think I'd put him on top because of that, because I think he is the most likely winner and he's not going to be a huge favorite. But I'm not 100% sold he's going to be able to reproduce that race, and I'm interested to see how he does run. But I'm confident enough that I'm more so that he's going to run good than bad. So that's why I put him on top. I agree with you guys that there's lots of long shots. I'm going to give you two other ones maybe to use when throw them in. I know that American Anthem seems over the top, and he's away from Baffert, and people are waiting for him to go down the tubes. But his race at 7 furlongs at Belmont was huge. There's not a total lot of pace in this race, so I don't think he's going to be up there and get kind of the trip that he wants. So we're going to find out if he's dead or not. And Danny Gargan has really been positive with this horse in the recent months. I think this is he thinks he's got him back to where the fact that he's going to run him in this race, I think, is a good sign. So if people forget about him, I think he's a good bomb. And I just want to, you know, throw out there that I don't think he's quite good enough, but I think he's a good suck up type of horse that for verticals and stuff. But Nitrous is a horse that's really working good. And I mean, way much better than he ever has. And his race was sneaky good against Whitmore and at Oaklawn. And again, I think it's very positive that Asmussen's bringing him shipping up here to run against all the big boys in this race too. I think that's he's been positive with him most of his career, but off of that race, that's enough for him to bring him up here to take a shot in this race. I think that's a good sign.
Well, I like nitrous as well. And, but I didn't pick him on top because he's 0-for-4 at the distance. And it just really seems like you need to be a specialist at this distance, unless you're just the superior animal. As far as Vekoma, the numbers I'm looking at have his last race as equal to his best as a 2-year-old. So not extreme. And, I think he's, you know, if I can include him, he's my third choice. I'm going to go with two horses. This is the race I feel most strongly about. And it's not a pound the table race, but it's pretty key. And I wish this was part of a live money contest somewhere, because I would bet pretty heavily on the two horses that I like, which are Network Effect. That's my Chad Brown that I love. And Performer. So the first thing I'm going to say about Network Effect, he's only developed a little bit since he was a 2-year-old. He was fast then. You know, his second race was a stakes race, and his third race was also a stakes race. And then he came back as a 3-year-old, and he ran well, and then he went into the Cigar Mile and just got eaten for breakfast. He came back at Gulfstream a couple races ago, and I think he won. Did he win? No, he got second as a favorite, and then he won his next race as the 3-5 favorite, which may not look that impressive, but, and this alludes to your point, Paul, about horses on the inside. This horse has some speed, but he doesn't like to run on the lead. He's starting from the 5 hole. No matter how this pace shakes out, he can get a pretty good position. And if he ends out getting stuck on the inside, which is a factor, he can handle it. He did that in his last race. So in his last race, he got up there. He actually had the lead for, you know, an eighth of a mile or so. And then the horses circled him. And usually if I have a bet on a 3-5, under that scenario, I'm thinking, no way is he going to get through. But he waited, and then he got through. And he won pretty easily. And then he galloped out pretty big, too. So this is his third race off a layoff. He's got the perfect post. He gets in super light at 116. I guess there are not many horses, except I guess Mind Control is at 124. But he's absolutely my play. He's 2-for-2 at the distance. Neither of you guys mentioned him, so that means he's probably going to be a price, even though he has IRAD on him. I love him. I love him a lot. Now, the only horse that can mess it up, and that's why I wish there was a live bankroll contest that I could bet, is Performer. I think this horse is just something special. You know, the only race that he's lost is his debut when he hit the gate. He has a beautiful pattern. His workouts are great. You know, it is not a super long layoff. And his last win, I love how Shug McGahee will run a horse like in allowance races, a maiden in allowance races, and just build that foundation. Even though they're running fast figures, he'll keep them going that way. And then he puts them in a grade 3 at a mile and an eighth, which he wins. And, you know, he beat Tax, and Tax is a pretty good horse. It's not amazing though, and so people are going to be trying to beat him. But he's 4-for-5, except for that one race where he hit the gate. I think this is a talented horse. I think he can get the position he needs. He's got enough speed to get the position he needs. And I will have a large exacta box on Performer and Network Effect. But I like Network Effect better, so I'm going to have probably like a 2-to-1 weighting where I crush the Network Effect Performer exacta, and then the other one's more like just a backup just in case.
So I got a couple questions for Paul in regards to what Scott said. Performer, what figures do you have for him? Because, you know, the numbers I'm looking at, he's not that fast yet. How do you see him compared to some of the others in here?
I don't have him fast as fast as Mind Control and Vekoma and Forensic Fire. And I was kind of like torn on Performer because I thought all three of his wins, I like him as a horse. He kind of got ideal setups in all three of them. You know, with that being said, I don't think he won because of those setups, but I'm always leery of taking short price horses that were getting the right setups. The thing that fooled me a little bit coming back on him is that he's working unbelievably good for Shug. You know, I know Shug sometimes will throw out some workouts that are fast before furlong, but he just seems to, I think he's worked 14 times and, you know, and every one of them looks better than the one before it. So that scared me a little bit to be like totally, my first instinct when I looked at the race was I'm against him. You know, he's not fast enough. He's had good setups, but I ultimately was more scared of him than what my instincts were telling me when I first looked at the race. I think this race is very evenly matched. That's why I brought up the way the race flows are going to have been going during the day. I wouldn't be shocked if you know, I don't particularly like the horses that Scott likes, but if the track came that direction, it wouldn't surprise me if he was right on. The one thing I do know is if the track becomes more so that the inside and speed isn't doing good, this is a type of race that will just run right. Those two outside horses are good enough that and they run all the time. Mind Control is a horse that he's not very flashy, but he's a nice horse, and he shows up every time. And maybe you can make the argument that Belmont, his best races haven't been at Belmont, but I don't know. This is a very difficult race to me because I think they're very evenly matched. I had some trouble with figuring. Especially this is a race to me that is one that you have to pay attention to what the situations and the circumstances of the day of what's happening. Because I think this is a type of race where things could happen. A lot of different possibilities could happen. That was my end feeling on this. And, you know, I wanted to ask you guys a question too, because like I said that when I started this, you know, a lot of these races, sometimes when you look at a race, you know what, you go through the formality of looking at all, but you already know who you like. And these four races, to me, I didn't have any of that feeling. And the more I looked at them, the more I had different feelings. And I want to know how much you guys do you change your minds a lot when you look at a race, or do you kind of go with your first instincts?
Yeah. Go ahead, Chris.
I was just going to say, I usually have some biases, but I try not to let them come into play too much. And I am changing some of my opinions. I mean, not necessarily 180 degrees, but just based on what I'm hearing you and Scott say in this discussions, I really like having this dialogue because it makes me think a little bit differently. Something I haven't thought about or didn't weigh quite as heavily. So for me, it's a process that I'm continually trying to add in new information and refine my opinion as I go. So I definitely change my opinion as I look through the race. And even as we're talking about them right now, I'm modifying some of my opinions. So definitely it's fluid for me.
Yeah. And I try to remain flexible when, we have only handicapped these for a certain number of hours. So I haven't looked at replays. Like, I landed on Eye in the Sky without even looking at the trip note on her last race. So now I want to watch that.
You should definitely watch that one if you like her too, because Chris is right on. He's right on the money on that one. That was a horrible trip.
Yeah. That could be like a send it in race, tomorrow, based on what I see in that trip. But also I've written down, like I write down under my picks, I write down on my iPad, I write, when you point out something that I haven't already discounted, like, for example, Mijos getting blinkers and running his, you know, two very good races. And then Chris also adding fuel to that fire, saying, pointing out the sprint route angle. Well, those are real, you know, especially in a race that's so, some of the races here are really open, and like that can make the difference between hitting a 50,000 pick five and getting thrown out. So I absolutely, I try to remain fluid.
I think that's a good sign. The argument can be the other way too. You can overthink things and get yourself in trouble. That's why I brought it up, you know, and it's, I think that's a tough thing for handicappers, you know, to try to figure out what type of race it is. Don't get yourself too confused or do I have to really think this one out? You know, it's, I battle with that all the time. You know, that's why I asked.
Yeah. I certainly sometimes like one example is I didn't like She's a Julie a couple of races ago. And I did like Mia Mischief. Now, Chris was like, Scott, you know, she tails off at this time of year. And I was like, that actually wasn't what was eating me, because it was only her third race off a layoff. What was eating at me, which I didn't mention, is that when she runs her best race, then she usually reacts to it, which she did because she finished third. But She's a Julie. Now, Chris was trying to tout me on that one, like, hey, like she always runs a race, blah, blah, blah. And I on Twitter, I was like, you're making a compelling case. But ultimately, I had to make my, you know, I reconsidered all the new information that I was getting from Chris. And then I finally said, no, I'm not going to use her. Now, I was out of the pick five either way because I stuck with Mia Mischief. So it wasn't the right decision. But that just gives you an idea of like my thought process. I definitely right. try to consider the new information, especially with the quality of handicappers we have on this pod, and then react appropriately. And, you know, sometimes we make the right decision, sometimes we don't.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah, in that regard, I would just say, for me, it's not black and white. I mean, it's not, there's no horse is 100% certain to win or 0% chance of winning. It's somewhere in between, and you just have to kind of assess that and then look for value. I mean, and it's just not a black and white thing. And
well, that's a good point too, Chris, is that, yeah, and then ultimately you got to figure out how it's being bet too, on top of everything else that can affect
exactly.
you.
Yeah, that's where the value is. So all just right, just real quick on this, because I hadn't beyond Bon Rosan, I really hadn't weighed in. Just two things. Vekoma, you know, the question is what happens this race off that big effort last time? George Weaver's really good second off a layoff. Typically, he's much better than off the bench. So that's a positive. The negative for Vekoma is this is the horse with that crazy paddling motion with the right leg, and usually horses that have those weird actions, you know, they're more likely to get hurt when they run fast than a horse that has really good mechanics. So to me, that's kind of a negative, so I'm sort of on the fence on that one, but I still think that's probably the most likely winner. And I just wanted to second Paul's opinion on American Anthem. I think that horse is live. I think Carmuch will send the horse. There's not a lot of pace, so I think he is dangerous. Danny Gargan is always dangerous. So the fact he has it rather than Baffert is not necessarily a negative to me, especially for an older horse. So, I think American Anthem's dangerous at a price. That's it.
All right. I'll just add one thing before we move on. And that is a reason why I'm against mind control. He's the kind of horse I've been right about many times. I've cashed on him at prices. So it's not like I always go against mind control. I like the horse, but he did just come off the biggest race of his life, carrying 124 from the outside. And this is another stat that don't disregard the stat at Belmont at this distance, last meet. Out of 19 races at this distance, seven furlongs, not a single winner from post eight on out. So that's, now there could be a winner tomorrow, and like it's one out of 20. So it's just a stat, but it's somewhat relevant when you're dealing with a potential favorite who's also carrying a high weight. All right, let's go before this pod becomes 2 to 3 hours. We'll go to the 8th at Santa Anita. It's the Run Happy Santa Anita Derby, grade 1, mile and an eighth on dirt, a purse of $400,000 for 3-year-olds. And Paul, what did you think?
Well, this is one that I didn't overthink. So when I watched them run last time, I thought Honor AP is going to beat Authentic the next time. And even though all these workout guys are think Authentic's going to run through the moon, I'm not changing. I'm like, they're not. When I watched the race, I had a thought, and I'm sticking with it, that the next time they run against each other, Honor AP is going to beat Authentic. This is a race I don't think is going to take too much time in the podcast, because they seem to be much better than the rest of the field. And I think it's just which direction you want to go. But I'm going all the way with Honor AP. I think that was the feeling I had when he ran that day. I think he's got way more upside. I think he ran as good. I'm a little worried that Authentic might get an easy lead, but ultimately I don't even care about that, because I think if my thought process was right on that day, he's still going to beat him.
Well, we'll find a way to overanalyze this race somehow. Chris, what did you think?
Well, I'm totally with Paul on Honor AP. In fact, that horse has been my early Derby pick for a long time now, from last year. I said, that's the horse I like for the Derby. It's crazy to make those kind of picks, but, you know, on Twitter and stuff, you do it all the time. So I really am an Honor AP fan. I do agree with the upside, and this horse is really well-bred. As a patient handler, it's exactly the kind of horse that will benefit from having the Derby in September instead of May. And I think that Authentic, with like Shooter Shoot in there, should definitely get more of a challenge early than he's ever had before.
I'm hoping so.
So to me, yeah, I agree. You know, Honor AP is the horse that to beat in here. But, you know, for the over-analysis part, I do have a price horse that I think might even be able to get in the exacta. And that's an Odor. I think that's how you say it. This horse, you know, showed some talent as a 2-year-old. Ran a clunker at first start as a 3-year-old. But I thought the last race wasn't that bad. They chased Charlatan, got a little tired, but I thought it wasn't a bad effort. It's been working well since then. It does have those fast 2-year-old races. And so if it could develop some, maybe third off a layoff, and it does sit off the pace this time, doesn't try to chase the hot pace, and Authentic does kind of get cooked and gets a little leg weary late, I think Anodora could be the one that runs second behind Honor AP at a big price, because I think everyone's thrown that horse away, figured it's no good. They gave it a couple chances. I'm going to move on. And the race may set up for it to trip out. I think Honor AP will beat it, but I think maybe it could sneak in there in the exacta. So I'm 6 Honor AP and 4 an Odor.
All right. I did not overthink it. I don't have any problem with Authentic, and I think he's the most likely winner. He basically stumbled at the start of his last race, and he still won with authority. I don't want to bet against him. He's undefeated. He's trained by Baffert. He's working great. He hasn't run too fast. You know, he hasn't run that gigantic number that makes me think he's due for a reaction. He's my pick, and it's not a great pick, but it helps even out the crazy long shots that I pick earlier. I did note that he ran a very sharp 6-furlong work in 1:11 on May 17th, and I haven't been reading the scuttlebutt. Like, I don't know that. Like, I haven't heard people saying, "Oh my God, Authentic's running like a beast in his workouts," but they just look good purely on the numbers. And Honor AP looks fine, but I don't know. He's 9 to 5 morning line. I don't think he'll go off that low. But to me, my angle, which is the sort of exacta play, I like Rushy from the inside. He's improved every race, and he won pretty easily in his last. I thought I wrote a trip note that said he, you know, seemed deft and seemed like he had more in the tank. And this trainer, Michael McCarthy, you know, he's just, he's really coming into his own. So I would make a cold exacta play if I was in a real money tourney, which I don't, I'm pretty sure I won't be unless I see something else I love at Santa Anita. But on the PH podcast private feeder, I will pick Rushy. Or no. On the NHC free contest that giving away three seats on Saturday, I will pick Rushy because I need an angle. And even if he gets second, he could pay almost as much as Authentic. But in the private PH feeder, I will play Authentic on top just because I think he's kind of easy money.
Just one other note on Honorite P. He's a gorgeous horse, and he's a really nice mover. Not that that really matters that much in terms of the winner's circle, but just watching him gallop and work, and he's just very flashy, very attractive. Reminds me, he just kind of attacks the ground when he gallops. Just a really nice-looking horse and really well-bred for what that's worth.
I'll just add, too, that you know, this is the type of race that's the, where I would say more the sport of horse racing. You know, it's like you're excited to watch the two horses run. You're not necessarily, it's not the same as kind of what we were talking about earlier with all the analyzing all the races and getting, you know, deep into a race and being correct about it. This is kind of like you pick your side, you know, it's like Affirm to Helidar, Easy Goer, Sunday Silence. You pick your side and you, and it's exciting, you know, and this kind of has that kind of feel to it to me, this race, you know, you just kind of, you know, it's fun, you know, it's the fun part of racing.
Yeah, absolutely. And, while we're talking about the, you know, just enjoying the sport of horse racing, I'm having a Belmont Stakes party. I usually have a party. I usually bring a bunch of people out to the track and then I have a small party afterwards. But since I didn't have a Kentucky Derby party this year and everybody here in New York is just like getting stir crazy, I'm having a Belmont Stakes party where we don't go to the track. I'm saving a lot of money by not going to the track. And we're going to have great stakes. And everybody who I invited that I normally would invite to the Kentucky Derby, they're all coming. And that includes a bunch of kids and everything. And we're going to, you know, have hand sanitizer and social distancing and we'll be watching the race from outside and that kind of thing. But, you know, my intention is to have people enjoy the races all throughout the day. So it's not just the Kentucky Derby, which usually with the Kentucky Derby, that's the main one. And like things are so busy that we don't have time to handicap. Or, you know, other people don't have time to look at other races. But in this scenario, I'm going to be having past performances printed out for people so they can play a series of races if they're interested. And hopefully we can get I can get some more of my friends to be a little bit more horse racing fans.
That sounds great.
All right. Well, do you guys have any other plays? I know I didn't have time to look at any other races, any other plays at Belmont or Santa Anita that you would like to spot play?
No, I didn't have a lot of time to get to the other races at for Saturday, unfortunately.
Yeah, I'm sort of, that's about all I have for this day. And I think we've gone pretty long, but I mean, I've really enjoyed it. So. Hopefully the listeners, if they're still on, have enjoyed as well.
I know. The PH
I'm sorry
podcast.
If I was long-winded. I'm probably the culprit, probably, right?
No. Scott and I don't need any help at all. But you were great, Paul. We really appreciate it. A lot of good insight.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Good luck this weekend, guys. And great. Best of luck with the Belmont party, Scott. That sounds great.
Yeah. And, you know, before you run off, we're only going to go for like another 30 seconds, but I want to thank you for, taking the time as you said, we spend a lot of time on these races because they are on the pod and they're public picks, and you know, we get, and you know, people are, they want some real guidance. So that's why we didn't look at any other races, because we want to make sure we had solid opinions on the five. So I totally appreciate you spending the time, taking the time out, and let's hope we hit some winners. So thanks for joining us, Paul.
Thank you.
All right. And that will conclude show number 67 of the PH Pod. May you score well tomorrow. And if in the public handicapper private feeder, good luck. And in the NHC qualifier, that's free. To close it out, please enjoy the Brooklyn Boogaloo Blowout.
Cheers.
Giddy up.